Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
You think about the person in your life when you started believing you more than anyone else. They're the ones that make the sacrifices. When I walk out, my old man's next to me. They're not just looking at you, they're looking at what made you. I want them talking about our fucking game. I want them talking about us. All right, enjoy your lunch.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name's Windy, and I'm joined by my sidekick and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Hello, Windy.
And our tactics guy, and a man who's been calling for a set-piece coach on a weekly basis, like a thumper. It's Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
I need a big old worm to come gobble me up.
And we're just going to leave that there, I think, for people to ponder on. People keep thinking that I say psychic and best friend in the intro, Bardi. Why do they think you're psychic?
Because pretty much all of my takes end up being correct.
Yeah. That's correct. That's it.
That is the right answer. I feel like there's loads of stuff I need to say, but I'll just deal with this quick one. Some people got fucking hell. Make America Great Again ads at the start of our podcast midweek. Let me assure you that was not intentional. So we should have all political advertising blacklisted. Obviously, something has slipped through as non-political advertising somehow. I've written a strongly worded letter, and I'm hoping that this will get resolved. I've also asked that people who received that advert get an apology and some sort of explanation as to why that happened on their next pod. I doubt that will happen. But
our official ideological position is that America has never been great, will never be great, does not have the capacity for greatness on any level. Yeah,
That might be your position. I can't say it's the official podcast position. We have too many American listeners for me to accept that.
I enjoy certain parts of America. I mean, it's nice. Washington is really nice. Parts of New York are pretty good. LA is all right.
Counts.
So yeah, I like certain parts of America. I've always fancied just buying a big house in, I don't know, somewhere like Utah. Where's the potato place? Where's the potato state? Idaho? Is that Idaho? Something like that. Just a big house.
Ireland? Right, we're going to have to tackle this game, and I don't want to talk about it because it was very unpleasant, but I guess we can start off with the starting 11 and say the bench was absolutely stacked.
I would just
like... with Richarlison returning and... Sorry, go on, buddy.
I was just going to say, before we get into the game, I'd like to delay us a little bit more. I want to give a shout out to Alex, the acupuncturist, who's been pricking people, especially my sister, on a regular basis. And he's doing a great, grand old job. And the other day she went into the centre and he was listening to The Extra Inch. So there you go. Before he's pricking people, he's listening to my hot takes and our statistical knowledge. So that's good. That's good to know that, yeah, he's starting all his pricking and with some good information in his ears.
Is that the technical term, pricking?
I imagine so, yeah. Sticking.
So the starting 11 was announced for the Fulham game. The bench was absolutely stacked with Richarlison coming back from injury. I was really happy with the team selection. I looked at it and I thought, yes, 3 points in the bag, overtaking Villa. This is going to feel great. Nathan, were you feeling similarly?
Yeah, I was back to definitely being excited for the Spurs games. Really looking forward to this one. And I recorded a podcast with John McKenzie for TIFO. At the end of last week, and talked about how great things are and how we're probably going to go on a really great run of games, ha ha ha, prior to this one. And then that will come out on Wednesday, I think.
The problem is with the games like the Villa game is it makes you believe that everything is fixed. All of our players are back to fitness and health. They're all coming back into form. We're scoring goals for fun in a variety of different ways. All is well in the world. We're beating good teams like Villa. What can go wrong? And then it's like, I've seen this. I've seen this happen before. Why am I tricking myself? I'm a Spurs fan. I should know what comes next. But it did feel like a proper sucker punch. Buddy, it was your birthday, wasn't it? The Fulham game day.
Yeah, it was. So I watched the first half, as lovely as that was. And then I missed the second half because my wife had gone against my wishes and organised a kind of surprise birthday dinner with people, even though I specifically asked, I don't really want to celebrate my birthday. Let's just go for dinner, me and you. It ended up quite a lot of us, but it was lovely to see everyone's faces. So that was nice. So I missed the second half and caught up with it later. But I think before Saturday, the worst Spurs had ever played on my birthday was our 1-0 defeat to Arsenal at home when Rizicki scored after 2 minutes when we were under Sherwood. And we just spent the rest of the game just not doing anything and Arsenal just kind of manhandled us. But I think this was worse. I think losing 3-0 to Fulham, especially like you said, everyone was already counting those points. We were already working out how we were going to go into the international break in the top four. So it's really disappointing. And I don't want to sound all Chiellini, but sometimes, you know, this is the history of Tottenham Hotspur. We do this.
I think it is also the history of most clubs, to be fair. And obviously it feels rough for us because, you know, we've just had that massive improvement. It feels like things are on the right trajectory. And then we go and lose 3-0 against a team we should be beating. But we should acknowledge that Fulham came to this game with a game plan. And I think Ange got out-coached, to be honest. And I think that doesn't happen very often and hopefully won't happen very often. But he didn't have an answer for Silva's game plan. Or if he did have an answer, it certainly came too late. And that was frustrating to watch. Ivan Victor says, this game felt like an example of not only the need for the squad rebuild to be acknowledged, which you chaps do, but also an example of Ange's lack of Premier League experience. What do you suggest Ange could do for the run-in? Are you going to do a tight 75 minutes on Dune 2? Well, there you go. We've done a Dune 2 reference already, but we are going to, in fact, bite the bullet and talk about the Spurs-Fulham game for the majority of this podcast. But Nathan, do you think this was an example of Ange's lack of Premier League experience?
That's not what jumps out at me about it. Like, I mean, I think when Ange has faced similar questions before, he said, well, like, I've managed a lot of games in my career already. He's had a long career, and fundamentally football is football at all levels. Obviously the technical and player level and even the coaching level, of course, is different at those levels. But in terms of, like, we're going to come on to, we probably needed to change to a midfield too. That's something that he's done several times this season alone. So that's not an experience thing. That's just a missed call on this game. And I don't think experience is really the relevant factor. Should we look into this game in detail? Should we look at some of what Fulham did and where things went wrong for us?
I think that's a good shout. So they came prepared to play in a 4-4-2 mid-block. They stopped access to the central midfield. When we did try and access the central midfield, it was a pressing trigger for them. They pressed really effectively. They won the ball. And when they won the ball high up, they poured forward in numbers. More noticeably than I've seen any other team do against Spurs this season, I would say, with Willian and Iwobi obviously given specific instructions to get on their bikes as soon as Fulham won the ball in the final third, supported, and I think really effectively supported by their fullbacks. Robinson, who I don't really rate, to be honest, but a lot of people do.
That's going to be taken worse than my comment by American listeners.
Well, he is loved, isn't he, by the Americans. I think he is really overrated personally, but he had a very effective game. And Castagna, who I think is a technically extremely adept player, I thought he had an excellent match as well. But the way they always had a spare man in their attacks out wide, so Willian and Iwobi would burst forward and then one of them would attack the box and one of them would hang wide, so they had another option out there and I guess to keep us spread across the pitch. Was really smart. It was really intelligent, and their running into the channels was brilliant. I saw them play so many good first-time balls around the corner into the channels.
Yeah.
Muniz is brilliant at doing that, obviously. Their midfielders did a really good job of doing that also. And it just felt like they were really well prepared for Ange Ball.
Yeah, I think so. So in a lot of ways, not a dissimilar setup to what we've seen a fair bit recently for first halves, right? Medium block rather than a low block. And passive to start and then very aggressive for the first pass into midfield. So whether that's into Sarr, into Porro, into Kulusevski, inviting the pass to the wingers and then being super aggressive, fullback onto winger, fullback onto winger.
And often inviting the pass into the winger on basically the halfway line.
Yeah.
So the winger, even if the winger can turn and get it under control, they've got like half a pitch and two men to beat.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll come back to win possession. Out of possession, Fulham built from the back a little, played very, very deep, like onto their own byline, very, very wide, drew out our pressing and then hit the ball long for competition for second balls. And this is why you and I think we probably should have moved to a midfield too, because Bissouma was having a bad game in general, but struggling with the fight for the loose ball in that situation, often 1v2, but also just losing 1v1 in that situation for whatever reason. That's I think their first goal came from that play, them doing that play twice in a row quickly. And obviously that's tiring for us and affects in possession and out of possession. In possession, I want to talk about, again, Fulham executing the game plan very well. Mid-block, very narrow, by which I mean committing almost their entire team over to one side of the pitch, which is curious because I wonder if that's how they were going to just set up anyway in this game, or I wonder if that was about us playing with Dragusin in place of Van de Ven, because the way that we play in possession, the way that any team plays in possession in modern football, basically, is you work the ball up one side of the pitch, you draw the opposition over to that side of the pitch, you play it back across your defensive line, then you play up the other side of the pitch where the opposition aren't. And if you do it fast enough, you can catch them off guard and attack space. If you don't do it quite fast enough, the opposition have to shuttle back over, and then you can do it the other side, and you can do the other side, you can do the other side, and you wear them down, you tire them out, and you look for gaps, and then suddenly you can shoot it up the middle when there's a gap, or finally you get that break on the opposite side. What we're doing in this game, we play up the right-hand side. Again, Fulham very aggressive when we played up the right-hand side. Sarr, very low pass completion in this game. Kulusevski struggled to progress the ball in any meaningful way in this game. We'd play it back to Romero if we kept the ball at all. We'd play it over to Dragusin, and Dragusin would turn back and play it to Romero. And Udogie barely saw the ball in this game. Madison didn't see the ball much in this game. He managed to find Brennan Johnson, but that was a trap. And when he played it to Johnson, they either won the ball or forced him backwards, or the pass didn't even find Johnson in the first place. I know this is very like, I invested my own work and found myself to be correct, right? I went back and I rewatched the Palace and Villa games for this as well. I really feel that the most significant problem in this game was Dragusin's distribution and how that affected our entire possession game, which, by the way, is not to say, given that we were having these issues, given that we were incredibly right side biased in our possession game, that at that point Bissouma shouldn't have gone, I need to do something different here, and I need to take the game by the scruff of the neck, and I need to make sure the ball's finding Udogie. I need to make sure the ball's, because Bissouma defaulted to just playing the ball back again and again. And the thing is, that has worked for us recently, like if you, especially the Villa game, and maybe I'll demonstrate this. Look at the Villa game. As in a lot of games this season, the opposition defending 4-4-2, they're putting two forwards on Bissouma, right? So that he can't turn. And what that does is, if Bissouma just stays in that pocket and only plays the ball back where it came from, or at least to the other centre-back, it creates lots of time and space for the centre-backs to make our play for us. But at the point where that's not happening with Dragusin, Basuma's got to start taking some risks and turning in that hole. And again, he's got to find Udogie. He's got to find Madison. Yeah, I mean, we conceded like 2.5 expected goals to Fulham, right? One of those is from a corner. I really don't like our new corner defending setup. We'll get into that. One of those is off a throw-in, an opposition throw-in in their own half. This has been a consistent problem for us this season.
Yeah, I've just been ranting about that to Bardi.
Okay. And The other is from Fulham's possession. Again, a deep possession where they draw out our press and then smash it into the channel and win the second ball. But most of the time I felt the problems we were having defensively in this game were from Fulham winning the ball, like you said, Windy, and really committing hard to the counter. And that problem starts with our in-possession game.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really great summary. We had a couple of questions about Dragushin. So Phil Krebs said, so what's up with Dragushin refusing to pass the ball to his left? And Blanky says, thoughts on Dragushin? He had bright sparks in the game, but clearly showed he has nowhere near the pace of Van de Ven and is definitely more suited to the right-hand side.
I mean, no one's as fast as Van de Ven, right? For the size he's at, but Dragushin ain't slow. Like, he swept up behind a couple of times.
I think my read on that, so I actually thought Dragushin was okay when I watched the game first time round. I thought his passing was not the best. It was okay. But when I watched it back, I was quite shocked at how many times he didn't aggressively put the press on Moniz. So when the team, because I didn't think our press was awful. I thought there was some, we pressed high. We were ambitious with our press. It's just that it often fell down because there was someone letting the side down. And on at least three or four occasions, that was Dragushin not joining the press, not committing to it fully. And so the lack of pace, maybe that he wasn't kind of on it with putting the press on. And I was really disappointed watching that back. And I do wonder if, in retrospect, I'm just thinking, God, if I just played Davis in this game, he was fine when he covered the majority of the time for Van de Ven. He's not a perfect player by any stretch, but he was fine. And I think he might have made a difference.
Yeah, that's a tough one. I think, and he also, he lost a runner for one of the crucial goals. Well,
the first goal, Moniz just goes off his shoulder, basically, and gets separation.
I would say with his defensive errors, with the missing of that run, with his hesitation to engage in our press, I would say, hey, look, it's his debut. I think he'll adapt. Yeah. He'll get better at these things. He'll learn the system. Whereas with his on-ball game, I would say I'm really concerned about that. Long term, I'm concerned about that because I don't see him making huge strides there, and that's really going to affect our game. And that's in playing with Romero, who's
a ball player.
A ball player. When he plays with Van de Ven, how is the ball going to get forward at all, let alone only up one side? So I'm worried about that. The change I called for at halftime was for us to switch Romero and Dragusin side of the pitch so we could access the left side. And I think that if Van de Ven is out for the next game, we've got to see those two the other way around, I think.
I'm a bit nervous about us talking a lot about Dragusin because although it wasn't a Ledley King debut where he comes in and he's seamless, I think there's far bigger culprits across the team. I thought Bissouma he had bit part players, Iwobi, Willian and the rest of them just wandering off him the whole time. I thought our midfield was a disgrace. I thought Maddison wasn't great. I thought there was the big problem was we just got pressed. We complain when teams sit back and how are we going to cope against breaking down the low block, and Fulham muster a little bit of a half press and our midfield just disappears. I thought there was absolute shades of Højbjerg about the way Lukic and the rest of them just wandered off Bissouma's shoulder. And I think that's where, I don't really want to blame Dragusin or say, had Van de Ven been playing, we would have won that game. So I don't think we would have. I think Fulham absolutely just done us. They knew exactly what to expect and they just worked us beautifully. And even before they scored their first goal, I think Romero put in four or five blocks, stopping really high, high XG chances, which don't register because they were blocked. But there was real issues from after the first few minutes. And I think a lot needs to be done in the next couple of weeks. And these are the moments where Postecoglou is going to prove himself, whether or not he is the real thing and whether he is more than just a nice soundbite.
Yeah, I take the point completely about singling out Dragusin. I just think it's interesting to analyze his performance, given we haven't seen much of him. And I kind of agree with Nathan that he's making his first start. There shouldn't be that much pressure on him. Other players need to take responsibility and deal with the fact that we've got a weakened left-sided centre-back. And they didn't do that. He didn't get support from those around him, I didn't feel. In terms of Ange's lack of responsiveness, so Tobias Howlett says, why do you think Ange took 20 minutes into the second half to make subs? I was baffled. I was baffled that he didn't change it after half an hour of the game, to be honest. And he could have done that with the personnel he had on the pitch. We've seen Ange move to a double pivot in games four or five times this season. And from my perspective, both from a build-up perspective, like having another player in build-up available to receive, but primarily from a screening perspective, so we're not getting caught over and over again on the counter, I thought just drop Saar back in with Bissouma and like have an extra body in there, have a double pivot, give Bissouma some support. Like, he was struggling. Individually, he was struggling. Bissouma didn't have a good game on the ball, but structurally, he was struggling even more because it was like three against one sometimes, and like, he's got no chance in that situation. So just drop Saar in there, give him a bit more protection, and then Maddison has a bit more of a free roll to try and move and find angles to receive the ball. And it, like Tobias says, it took Ange 20 minutes into the second half to do anything, let alone make a sub. Like, he didn't change shape, he didn't change system, he didn't change approach. There were no tweaks, as far as I could see. He did nothing. And I was quite shocked by that, I must admit. We've seen before that Ange likes to make some noise, I assume, at halftime and give some pointers and then let the players try and correct it. So, yeah, sure, like, part of me is like, well, he's not going to change it because he never does. But it was so apparent that Fulham had the beating of us, both with and without the ball. And, yeah, I was very surprised that nothing changed. Nathan, what do you think was the rationale for that?
I'm really not sure. Because, again, like you said, like, we've seen those changes made. We've also gone through a run of games where, like, we've changed nothing at halftime. The opposition have changed their approach for us, and that's won us the game, right? So maybe that's like helps support the idea of just sticking with your team and trusting that the result will come, that the performance will come, that you've made progress in the first half. But the thing is that, like, again, I went back, I watched Villa, I watched Palace games. We didn't create significant chances in the first half of those games, but we pushed the opposition back into their own third. We flattened them out. We accessed the final third. We threatened to threaten. Whereas in the Fulham game, they kept us at arm's reach the whole game. And also, obviously, we were really struggling for the second ball in midfield. I'm really not sure.
The concerning thing here is, apart from Van der Ven, this is like our first team, and we've had time and time on the training pitch and everything else. And we've a 50% win rate in the league since we started this year. And it's a worry that when teams... So we've started winning games when teams have changed to a system or a style, which has all of a sudden suited us. We've gone in and we slapped them. But when teams are a bit more kind of smart, or they've played a certain way and they've stuck to that system, we've not come up with the answers. So I think there's a real concern here that unless a team kind of opens up and gives us what we need, we're really struggling to get anything. If you look at Wolves, Fulham, even United, Everton, we really struggled in those games because those teams refused to kind of play how we wanted them to play. And I don't want to be down, man.
I completely agree.
I don't want to be down.
It's hard. Time. Like, I think it's kind of impossible not to, in a way, because we just lost 3-0 to Fulham, and it's like we have every right to feel pissed off about that, and we need to vent. But it doesn't mean like the world's going to end. Not Spurs are still a really good, competent team, and there's so much to be excited about. And I really want to talk about that a lot more in this podcast. But before we stop being down, there is another issue that I want to talk about, and I have been raising this in recent weeks. Mulsey17 says, are any of you becoming concerned that our possession-heavy style is unsuited to our current striker options? Son lost possession and failed to hold up the ball versus Fulham. Richarlison is seriously inconsistent, whilst all of our other options prefer the ball played into space. Should a priority in the summer be identifying a starting striker who can actually hold the ball up and bring others into the game? I mean, I will start on this. I was saying at halftime in Discord and on Twitter that I would bring on Højbjerg for Saar and Richarlison for Johnson. My rationale being Højbjerg and for Saar for ball retention and another body behind the ball when we get pressed and lose the ball. And Richarlison for Johnson because we needed a focal point and that would allow Son to move wide. Because Ange wasn't going to take Son off. He never takes Son off unless he has to. But Son was dreadful. And in my rewatch, I noticed it even more, how much the ball was just bouncing off him. And it was kind of the comparison of Son and Muniz was kind of like a good summation of the way the game went. Like with Muniz, everything either stuck or he played a first-time ball around the corner and then got into the box. His finishing was impeccable. Whereas with Son, it was... the ball was played into his feet and he'd have a heavy touch and he'd lose it, or he'd try a first time pass and he'd lose it, and his shooting was wayward. And like I've been saying since he came back from his trip away, that he's impacting games with his
goals,
productivity, but that is kind of disguising the fact that he's not playing very well as a striker, in my opinion. And I think we really miss Richarlison in that focal point role. I know Richarlison came on and missed some good chances himself. Don't get me wrong. He was quite wasteful. But I do think he's much better at taking the ball into feet.
And a bit of scrappiness and fight in a game where we're getting out-efforted, out-fought for loose balls, right? Yeah, maybe. I don't know, it's tough with those two, right? Because, like, Richarlison's better at hold-up play than Sambi. He's not brilliant at hold-up play. And we spoke about that a couple of weeks ago. But it's like, how are we realistically going to improve on those two? Like, you're talking about, like, spending $100 million for a striker who displaces both of them. And then what do you do with those two players in your squad? I just think that, like, we've got two good options at forward and we play them. And that's kind of all the conversation we can have. We can say, I want both of them to work on their hold up play. But that's kind of as far as that conversation really goes.
I agree. I mean, I think I'm really happy with our striker options, by the way. I think Son and Richarlison are both very good and will score lots of goals between them in the system. What I really want is for them to be more equal, for them to be seen by Ange as more equal. I think Son is still seen as, because he's such a brilliant, brilliant finisher, like one of the best finishers in the world football, he's seen as so far ahead that even when Richarlison's fit and available, I don't think he's going to be ahead of Son in a pecking order unless like the wide options are depleted and he kind of has to come in with Son moving wide. I think Richarlison has, in my opinion, as much of a claim to play through the middle for Spurs as Son does.
Yeah.
And I want them to be seen in that way by Ange.
Yeah, it's really tricky, right? Because Son's our best player, but also he's not our best option at centre forwards and he's not our best option on the left wing. I think that at the moment he needs to be coming off the bench. I guess it depends on the opposition, right? If we think there's going to be space in behind, Son should start. If we think that there's not going to be space in behind, Richarlison should start. And then we switch to the other around 60 minutes. But that's a tough way to use your megastar, right? It's tricky.
Yeah, it's difficult. They're almost too similar. They're not like very, but they're like too similar, but they're not different enough to be able to play one or the other. They both got similar traits in a way, like penalty box finishing, because Son really doesn't whack them in from distance anymore. I don't think Son left works. I still think the best forward line we have is Werner, Son, and Johnson. I think that gives us better balance than Kulusevski. I'm really down on Kulusevski at the moment, and I wouldn't be against putting him centrally and taking Maddison out for a little bit, because I just feel like Maddison's not really achieving what he was doing before, and I just find him sometimes a bit lightweight. I don't think he supports us really, but it's difficult with Son and Richarlison.
Yeah, you just one other solution to the way that we played in possession might have been to switch Sarr and Maddison in terms of their get Maddison on the right side of the pitch, move Sarr onto the left to try to mix it up a little bit, or potentially bring on Werner, move Kulusevski into midfield, something like that, so that we just improve our overall technical quality. But then that leaves Bissouma even more isolated, so I don't know.
Just a really, really disappointing match.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Sometimes in life, you arrive at a place and you don't know what's going to happen. Sometimes the defence sits deep. Sometimes they mid-block. Other times they press and Spurs get battered. There's nothing me or you could do to impact this. These are factors out of our control, my friends. So my advice would be, focus on the elements of your routine and your life you can have an impact on. You know where this is going. Focus on things like your nutrition. I use AG1 as part of a balanced lifestyle to help me along my way. It's got the nutritional foundations that help me. It never makes a mistake, gets caught up the pitch or has a bad day. It's not got hamstrings like dental floss, and it doesn't jump into a tackle two-footed and leave you a man down. I trust AG1 to deliver me what I need every morning. It's something that I control, with a scoop, a shake, a dash of vitamin D and a squeeze of lemon. Focus on what you can do, and don't worry about Ange not making a sub until we're already 3-0 down. Drink AG1 and worry less about Spurs and their Spursy ways.
If there's one product we had to recommend to elevate your health, it's AG1, and that's why we partnered with them for so long. So if you want to take ownership of your health, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase exclusively at drinkag1.com/extrainch. That's drinkag1.com/extrainch. Check it out. So we released a podcast about the season ticket price rise at the end of the week. Thank you to Andrew Niven for sharing the Facebook group Save Our Senior 66, which is about holding on to the concessionary pricing. And also thank you to Paul Nelson for his thoughts on being an expat fan in New Zealand, watching Crazy Hours with headphones on. Really appreciated that. Had loads of feedback about that pod. It's a very divisive issue and not everyone is in agreement, but I think we handled it as sensitively as we could under the circumstances. You can't please everyone. No one, we're not all going to have the same view, but it's important that we talk about these things, I think. We released that as a bonus podcast. We find that when we tag the pods as bonuses and don't put episode numbers in, they don't get as many listens. That could be due to the means you're listening by. And a few weeks back, I released a bonus with Alex Stoyle, who is a sports psychologist, a brilliant sports psychologist and a Spurs season ticket holder. And that pod has had like 66% of our rough download numbers. It's really good. Alex is fantastic. So if you've not heard that yet, go back and listen. It's well worth it, talking about Ange and his sports psychology style. Chris from the UK says, I'm seeing people on social media say that Ange's system isn't working because we don't have a good number six in the team. Do you agree with this? If so, which world-class six do we bring in? Buddy, you were talking a bit about Basuma earlier on. Where are you with him at the moment?
I think he started the season amazingly, and all of a sudden we were like, oh my God, here's this guy that's just been sat on the bench for a season. He's going to change how we play and change our whole system.
Yeah.
But then something happened to him. He had a couple of sending offs, and he has not been really the same player since then. Obviously, he's come back from African Cup of Nations, and he's not doing what he did do. Like, I don't feel like he's this guy that's going to break a press anymore. I don't feel comfortable in his kind of recovery challenges and his sweeping up ability. And I just don't feel as secure. There's like a number six, there should be a sense of calm when they get the ball, that they're going to come around and sweep things up and just sort things out. And I know that a few people early on in the season were comparing Basuma and Rice and who was the better of the two. And a lot of people said Basuma was better than Rice, but you just don't get that same kind of comfort and security right now. And I don't know if it's him or the system, but there's been a significant drop off and it's really hurting us.
Yes, it's a really tough one. I mean, Basuma is clearly a good player, is the first thing to say. There are many things that Basuma is good at, and being press resistant and dribbling through midfield are standout qualities, I would say. I have a concern that his passing range is affecting us more than we notice. Okay. And that's why I think I enjoy it when Højbjerg comes on sometimes, because he just is much more expansive than Basuma. He has more ability to find a long range pass. Obviously, there's a drop off in other areas when Højbjerg is there rather than Basuma. So I'm not advocating starting him over him. I think there is an argument that you could get away with playing both in a pivot, and especially in a game like this, you know, that would make a lot of sense to me. And I think when we do sign another six, which I think is somewhat likely for the summer, I hope it's a six who can play the ball over a longer distance than Bissouma can. But that said, you don't get many number sixes who are good at carrying, good at screening, good at long range passing, as press resistant as Bissouma. I don't know that that player exists, or if he does, it's like almost impossible. I mean, yeah, Rodri, basically. and we can't sign Rodri. Are there any others that exist in that mold?
None that are jumping to mind as available to Spurs. Tough ask. Like saying, oh, we need someone who's better than hold up play than Son of Richarlison, right? It's like, okay, sure. I don't know, man. Bissouma confuses me because I don't get it. It's like we just had a game against Villa where, like, okay, he was quiet in the first half for tactical reasons that make sense because he's opening up the space for Romero to play forward passes with. Great. And then the second half, Villa press, he comes alive and he's brilliant because he can draw his man in and dribble around him and open up the space behind. And that's excellent. And then we have a game against Fulham and it's like his touch is loose. Why? That's the one thing that we know you're excellent at. Why have you suddenly got a loose touch? Because I feel like inconsistency is used far, far too much in analysis. People say, oh, this player had an off game. Okay, but why? Like people say Udogie had an off game against Fulham. It's because he didn't receive the ball, right? Madison had an off game against Fulham. It's because we weren't accessing his side of the pitch, right? Most of the time when it's like, oh, this player's been in good run of form, but he was terrible today, there are clear, obvious tactical reasons. Why does Bissouma swing violently in quality from game to game? Maybe that's tactical too, but not in a way that is clear to me. Why does his first touch, his best attribute, disintegrate? Does he just get bored? Is it a concentration issue? Does he need to be on Ritalin like I need to be on Ritalin? Like what's going on there?
Honestly, in this game, I think his spirit was somewhat broken by the amount of Fulham players breaking towards him constantly. It's so hard for him to do anything about that. And I'm not saying he threw the towel in, but I think he was probably finding it very frustrating. You know, how many times did Fulham turn us with a one ball forward? Suddenly we're running back towards our own goal and he's doing everything he doesn't want to do. I think he was just shook, basically, as the whole team were.
He just wasn't doing Bissouma things. All his numbers are down, carries, moving the ball. It was just, they cut him out of the game. And perhaps yeah, that's a Tottenham problem. But like you said earlier, that Postecoglou allows these players to kind of figure it out for themselves, to work out a system or figure it out, a way around it. But just between Saar, Bissouma, Madison, they didn't do that. They didn't figure out a way to fix this. And if Postecoglou is all about allowing players the freedom to do that without controlling them into set automations like what Conte would do, then I would expect a little bit more from them. And it's just disappointing that they're not doing that.
Yeah, Nathan produced some chalkboards for the three midfielders post-match. And I thought they were very telling and kind of told the story of the game quite nicely. Bissouma clearly not getting on the ball as much as usual because we weren't able to access him in the middle of midfield. Madison trying things but often failing because there was no space to work in and he was getting starved of the ball, so he was more desperate to try things when it came to him. And Saar, essentially whenever he received the ball, passing it backwards or trying something and giving it away. Yeah. Like Nathan already said his pass completion was way down. It was under 70%, which is unheard of for him. Because they blocked us out of the game essentially through the middle of the pitch and we didn't have any answers.
Well, we saw specifically, right? We've talked about him quite a bit as being excellent in open spaces, ability to cover ground, transition play either way, gliding with the ball, but suffering when things are tight. And again, in this game, because so much of the game was going up that right-hand side and Fulham committed their entire midfield, their entire back line over to that side of the pitch, he's just constantly operating in a tight space. So definitely, like I was talking about, oh, why did this player have a rough game? There are clear, obvious tactical reasons for Saar. It was very poorly suited to his skill set this game.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's where I'm frustrated with Ange for not changing it. Hopefully he will learn from this experience.
But you're right, he could have changed it. He could have changed it after 15, 20 minutes because it was clear what was going on, but he didn't. And it's disappointing that we're seeing this happen quite a few times now. We come on here and we complain about the timing of his substitutions. Either they're too late or sometimes they're even disrupting momentum.
Yeah, I think it's a fair point. Peter Strom says, "It's me, the so-called Lucas Bergvall scout. You, Garden, have played two more games, the quarterfinals and the semifinals of the Cup. I didn't manage to see the whole quarterfinal game since they played at the same time as Spurs last week. In the quarters, they played Degerfors, Alfie Whiteman's former team. Jurgarden were the better team throughout and scored three goals in the second half. Lucas assisted to the last one. The highlights showed the usual Lucas Bergvall brilliance. It felt like his team were just a superior team, but he helped them see the game out. In the semis, there was a rivalry game against AIK from the same division. The two teams hate each other with a passion. Jurgarden tried to play expansive football and AIK are trying to close the gaps, be disruptive and make it a fight rather than a match. In the 14th minute, Lucas scored a header and for 94 minutes, it was the deciding goal. In the end, Jurgarden won 3-2 in the penalty shootout. Lucas was excellent during the whole game. He drifted in and out of position, drew foul after foul for long periods of the game to keep hold of the ball for his team. He was the best player, but he didn't want to take a penalty. The reason he was so knackered from constant harassments from the AIK players, he could hardly stand up after the 120 minutes. Safe to say he's progressing nicely. Nice. I personally think like we've probably left him at this level a bit too long, but it's details, isn't it? It's small details, and it certainly won't hurt to have him in an environment he feels comfortable with for the rest of the season. But it does seem like it's a bit too easy for him. Let's end the pod by talking about Udogie. We've had some questions about him recently. Who was this one from? This was from Stephen Doyle Page, who listed a bunch of possible options as a rotation for Udogie. His sensible options were Estupinan, Cambiasso, Mela, Mattsson, Ait Nouri, and Gutierrez. But his choices were Anthony Robinson, who I slagged off earlier in the pod, and Hartman from Feyenoord, who he describes as an aggressive defender and technical ball player.
Ooh, okay.
So perhaps one for Nathan to consider. Ito is another one that has been talked about on this pod previously. I would add in Doughty and Walker-Peters as two homegrown options. The benefit of Walker-Peters is he's not only homegrown in the Premier League, but he's also club trained in UEFA competitions, which would be a huge, huge advantage. But I do want to talk about Udogie more generally. And this isn't a hot take, by the way. I think Udogie is brilliant. I think Udogie is a sensational signing, a sensational young player. I do think that we could quite easily sign a player on his level to support him next season. I think a player that can pass the ball effectively, a bit like Porro does on the right-hand side, but from the left, would be really useful. Udogie, obviously an incredible ball carrier. Knowing when to release is his issue.
Sure.
And I think it's quite a big issue. And I think it's the thing that will hold him back. If he doesn't improve that, he's never going to be a 10 out of 10 player. That is to say, he's already an 8 out of 10 player. He's brilliant. He's a brilliant, brilliant player, and he fits the system really well. But if he's going to get better, it's when do you release the ball in your carries and when do you choose not to carry at all but pass from deep? Bardi, what kind of player would you like to bring in? Any ideas?
Let's sign DeMarco, and then we have the two Italian left-backs at left-back. That'd be great. That boy can whip it, he can cross it, he can pass and shoot. That'd be quite nice, but that's fantasy speaking. Carl Walker-Peters would be nice for you, Windy. We should hold a little party for you to celebrate. The thing about Destiny is he, like you said, he's brilliant, but he's always good. Even when he's having a bad game, he's still really good, you know? And I think we've just almost become accustomed to what he offers us down the left, and it's the same with Porro. But so to sign an equally good left-back, it's going to be really difficult, especially for the kind of money that will cost. But this is his first season, man. I'm very happy. I'm very happy with him. But we do need an alternative to him and Porro for sure. Davies and Royale just aren't it, especially if we're going to have two games. We will have two games a week next week of some sort. So we definitely need to do something there.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, I probably next month I'm going to start work on profiles for the summer, which will be fullbacks, whether that's two fullbacks or one, probably two. I think I'm leaning towards two fullbacks at the left side and the right side, only because only a consideration because of the likes of, you know, Kyle Walker-Peters, who can play both sides. But I think that for depth reasons, we probably want two, one of which would probably need to be homegrown. Again, Kyle Walker-Peters is homegrown, club trained. Very worried about him defensively still.
Yeah,
fair. Hartman's an interesting shout because I prefer Gittrauder, who plays a bit of right back and a bit of centre back at Feyenoord. But I will look through the names you mentioned, Windy, and also question askers in the next few weeks, I think. Nice. Mattsson, really, 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 really good. Contracted to Chelsea, too short. Joachim Mähler, probably not quite the right profile. Stupinan, we're not getting him out of Brighton to play second choice. Ait Nouri, maybe. Cambiasso, like maybe. Those two are worth having a look at, I think, in more detail.
Nice. Yeah, this is the promising thing about fullback, is there are some good options out there at the moment. Whereas I think people were quite nervous about us finding backup inverted fullbacks when Ange first came in. And I think now we've seen how the season's gone, I think people are a bit more optimistic about it. There's a lot of potential, I feel. Just to add to what Bardi was saying about Udogi's levels, and, you know, even when he's playing badly, he's good. I don't think we'd find a better one-on-one defender than Udogi. I don't think we can. I think he is one of the best in the world. Like, just ridiculously tight one-on-one. So hard to beat, so hard to get around. The only way you can get around him is by doubling up on him. And, you know, you can double up on any player and beat them. It's not a Udogi thing. He is a fabulous, fabulous defender. We've got an international break next week. I really hate it when we lose before an international break, don't you? Just awful, awful time. We've got to sit with this for a fortnight now.
It just stretches it all out. I'm off to watch Colombia against Spain at the West Ham Stadium on Friday, which should be a nice change from everything else. I'll see who's playing. Hopefully I get to see a bit of Porro.
Nice. Nice. And if you've got any talking points for us in the international break, do send them through podcast@theextrange.co.uk. Happy to tackle some slightly different issues, given we've got no match to talk about. Yeah, drop us a note.
You have been listening to The Extra Inch with me, Windy, my sidekick and best friend, Bardi, and our tactics guy, Nate Clark. If you like this, there's plenty more at patreon.com/theextrainch. Production is by Nathan A. Clark. Our logo, artwork and website are designed by Creighton Miller. Our music is by David Lindmer. You can find him on Instagram @DavidLindmer. Do check him out. He's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook @TheExtraInch. Email us at podcast@TheExtraInch.co.uk. Subscribe, leave us a rating and a review. And most importantly, be sure to tell all of your Spurs friends. Shout out to the ex-subs, we love every single last one of you. And of course, come on you Spurs.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.